Welcome to another Stock Market Media Group CEO interview. As part of a series to keep investors informed, we invite executives to tell their company's story. So sit back, listen in, and let's meet today's guest.
And thanks for joining us. We'd like to welcome in Dr. Gerald Crabtree. He said that I could call him Jerry. He is the Chief Operations Officer at Nuvolix Incorporated, NVLX. They trade on the OTCQB at right around a nickel a share. Welcome in, Jerry. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate the opportunity to explain the Nuvolix story.
Dr. Crabtree, if you could, give us an overview of Nuvolix and the areas that the company will focus on.
Nuvolix is a biotechnology company whose base technology is a cell encapsulation process that is unique among all cell encapsulation processes. And we plan to use this in the development of treatments for cancer, diabetes, and for diseases that could employ stem cells, as well as probiotic bacteria and things of that ilk.
The cell encapsulation technology is obviously the company's golden egg. So if you could, for any new investors out there or anyone new to the company that maybe is not familiar with cell encapsulation, could you give us a brief overview of what that is in sort of layman's terms?
What cell encapsulation does is that it allows cells to be placed in specific locations within the body and to keep them in those locations. And it also protects the cells within the capsules while they perform the function that they were designed for in the first place.
Thanks a lot. That certainly helps us to understand more about what cell encapsulation is. Now, if you could, maybe tell us a little bit about the makeup of the cell that you put into a body.
In our case, what we have is an encapsulation process that utilizes cellulose as the base material. In other words, we put the cells in tiny, about pinhead size or a little bit smaller, cotton bags, if you will. Now, these bags have the cells inside them. They have pores in the bags that are large enough to allow nutrients for the cells to enter the capsules and for allow waste products from the cells to leave the capsules. But they're not large enough to allow the cells themselves to leave the capsules. And they're not large enough to allow cells of the body's immune system to enter the capsules and destroy the cells within them.
Could you cite some advantages that your technology has over maybe some other companies that are doing some of the same things?
Now, there's several types of cell encapsulation that are being investigated by other entities, but we believe that ours has distinct advantages over the other companies or other entities, if you will, encapsulation processes. First of all, ours is what we all believe is a true platform technology. What I mean by that is that other companies' technologies are often directed to the treatment of a single type of cancer or a single disease. Ours has many possible uses. And for other companies' cell encapsulation methods to be used with different types of cells, depending on the disease that they're going after, major modifications to the encapsulation process have to be made. With ours, this isn't the case. We can just do minor tweaking and encapsulate virtually any kind of living cell, and I emphasize living. Our technology has been validated according to standards called the Good Manufacturing Practices, and this is an essential step in obtaining marketing approval by agencies such as the FDA, and we've already passed that. We've already got our system mature. Now, other types of cell encapsulation, when they're used, the actual capsules and the cells within them can cause inflammation and damage to tissues near the capsules where they've been implanted. And the actual cells within them over time, within the capsules over time, can be damaged by immune system responses from the body in which they're placed. Ours are, as I said before, made of cellulose. They're entirely bioinert. Even in our expanded clinical trials in pancreatic cancer, after 2 years, the cells were still alive and functioning, and there was no immune response elicited by the presence of the cells or the capsules. So those are a couple of advantages of our technology over others' technology.
Now, getting back to the areas of focus you mentioned earlier, the diabetes, the cancer, and the stem cells, how can the technology benefit each of those areas?
Each in different ways. The whole idea with our cancer treatment, anyway, is that we can place drug-activating cells. In other words, most cancer drugs, or many cancer drugs, require activation before they can kill the cancer cell. We can encapsulate cells that activate such drugs and place them very close to the tumor so that the benefits of the drug are maximized. For diabetes, one of the ways to treat diabetes, especially type 1 diabetes, in which patients require daily insulin injections, is to use pancreatic cell transplantations. Now, the particular cells are called islet cells. They are the ones in the pancreas that produce insulin. In type 1 diabetes, the pancreas does not produce enough insulin. In type 2 diabetes, enough insulin is produced by the pancreas, but over time, the insulin becomes less effective. Now, I have type 2 diabetes. I take drugs every day to control it. Eventually, even people with type 2 diabetes are going to require insulin injections. Now, what we can do is encapsulate pancreatic islet cells that produce insulin and put them in the body and protect them again from immune system response. Why do this? Because currently the way some of these things are being developed is the islet cells are being obtained from cadavers, recent cadavers. But when they're transplanted into another individual, they're foreign and they're subject to immune system attack. So by encapsulating them, we protect the cells from immune system attack. Stem cells, same idea. What's the problem with stem cells? Stem cells have been around for quite a while now, and the progress, to my mind anyway, the progress in the field hasn't been as rapid as everyone thought it would be, because stem cells are being tried for, you name it, they're being tried for it. The problem with stem cells is if you give naked stem cells, in other words, unencapsulated stem cells, if you transplant them, half of those transplants will fail because the stem cells don't stay where you put them. They migrate to other sites in the body, and they reportedly cause abnormal growth, including tumors. So the idea is, how can we improve on this? If you encapsulate the stem cells, you do not detract from how the stem cells work. By and large, produce factors that stimulate the other tissues around them to grow or repair or whatever the case may be. So if we encapsulate the stem cells, we protect them from migration. We protect them from any immune response that might be elicited. Suppose a different individual than the patient, they'd be subject to rejection. We could protect against that by encapsulation. So there's just three instances on how this stuff could be used.
The company has certainly put the technology to work in not one, but two clinical trials. Dr. Crabtree, bring our listeners up to speed on those trials.
These were two independent, what I call mid-phase of development from an FDA standpoint, of a pancreatic cancer treatment involving our cell encapsulation in patients with advanced inoperable pancreatic cancer. The treatment involves a single, one-time implantation of cells that have been genetically altered, augmented, if you want, to activate a cancer drug called ifosfamide. Now, ifosfamide, what happens is a single implantation of encapsulated drug-activating cells is placed in the blood supply very near the pancreas and hence the pancreatic tumor. Then ifosfamide is given in its usual way intravenously at one-third of the dose that ifosfamide is usually used for cancer treatments. What happens is the drug goes through the blood system, and when it gets to those cells that have been encapsulated, it's immediately activated, and it is so close to the pancreatic tumor that it has dramatic effects.
And what results did the trials bear out?
The results from these studies, essentially, at the time these studies were done, and still today, the only drug approved as a single agent for the treatment of advanced inoperable pancreatic cancer is Gemzar or gemcitabine. It was an Eli Lilly drug, and it's been around for a long time. There's been a lot of attempts to improve upon its activity, improve upon its use by adding new drugs to it. But the results of those studies were that the improvement was marginal at best, and attempts are still going on. The thing about pancreatic cancer is it's notoriously difficult to treat. You can't even detect it symptomatically until it's at an advanced stage in most cases. So it's a big problem, and it's very, very hard to work with. With our studies, with ifosfamide, together with our cell encapsulation, when we compared our results to those that were reported historically for Gemzar, we found an essentially doubling of the average patient survival time. And we found an almost doubling of the number of patients that survived 1 year. Just to put that in perspective, people with advanced with pancreatic cancer, only about 6% of them survived more than 5 years, okay, even with treatment. So we've got a marked improvement over the gold standard for the treatment of that disease. The other thing that happened is we got very low side effects from ifosfamide because we used one-third of the dose. And lastly, we only gave two cycles of treatment of ifosfamide, and normally ifosfamide is given quite a few more times than that. So the results, to my mind, are remarkable. It's a small number of patients because it was a mid-phase study, but it is absolutely remarkable. I've been in the cancer business 40 years, and I know something good when I see it, I think.
Those are definitely some incredible numbers for the company. So what's next?
What's happening now is we are making preparations for a late-phase study, much larger clinical study of the type that will be required. It is essentially the last phase in the clinical development plan for approval for marketing. And we're going to use that same treatment. But what we're going to do this time is some of the patients will receive our treatment, and some of the patients will receive Gemzar. So we're doing a head-to-head comparison. We're not looking at historical data. We're doing a head-to-head comparison. And this is the way it has to be done. We already have identified some study sites. We've already started to expand our cell bank. In other words, the drug-activating cells that will be encapsulated. We have to get much larger numbers of those so that enough can be encapsulated to complete the study. And that's where we're at right now, and we're working feverishly to do that. Now, this study is going to take a couple of years to do, but if the results of the phase two studies, the studies that I just spoke about, pan out and are similar, then we've really got something. We will have a marked improvement over anything else that's out there or even being tried.
Jerry, having the second study confirm the first study, is that what gets you excited about these trials?
The mere fact that we got the same results in two totally independent studies is what intrigues me. It's not a one-time thing. So that even makes our base of belief stronger, I think. And I can't see it failing. What we may do in this upcoming pivotal study is don't stop at two cycles of ifosfamide, but do more cycles. Because why limit ourselves? We want to get the best return on investment that we can. The idea behind the lower dose and being able to get away with a lower dose and still get the dramatic anti-cancer effects that we got was that the quality of life of the patients on treatment is so improved over what's normally out there. And I mean, if you're going to live a year or a year and a half, you have to remember that the survival of most patients with this disease is a few months. So if you can improve on that significantly, think what that means to those individuals that have it. And we all know prominent people that have died from this. Steve Jobs of Apple is a recent example, and he tried everything.
Dr. Crabtree, you have a pretty impressive resume, including a stint with Bristol-Myers Squibb when they brought a drug, Taxol, to market, which many people are very familiar with. What can that experience with Bristol-Myers Squibb and some of the big pharmaceuticals that you've been with, what can that bring to Nuvalex?
I joined Bristol-Myers Squibb early in 1990, right after Bristol-Myers and Squibb merged, and right after Taxol was acquired by the merged company by BMS from the National Cancer Institute to further develop it. I was tasked with establishing for the first time within the company a Department of Project Planning and Management for Oncology and Immunology. And my personal task was to manage the development of Taxol. What I learned from that was a lot about the overall development process for drugs, including regulatory affairs and all of that stuff. And it was a valuable experience. But Taxol became a billion-dollar drug in very short order. It was the number one drug under development at Bristol-Myers Squibb in the whole company when I was there. And it was challenging, but it was a profound learning experience. And how do I use that? I use that experience to help push the development of this pancreatic cancer treatment and for other stuff as well, because drug development in cancer can be different in some respects from what I would say is regular drug development, but it's not that much different. And that's the knowledge base that I have. I've got 40 years of experience in cancer drug development, so I might as well put it to good use. And I can't think of a better place to be than where I am right now.
Dr. Crabtree, with Nuvalex entering into the medical marijuana arena, could you speak to the focus of the new subsidiary, Medical Marijuana Sciences Incorporated, for us?
It was established to take advantage of the boom that is happening and is going to happen in the whole medical marijuana arena. I don't know the statistic, but 17 or 18 states already have legalized certain aspects of its use. We want to stand out from a lot of these other companies that are involved with growing marijuana, with extracting marijuana, with making cookies out of it. I don't mean to demean it in any way, but we want to go back to our roots, if you will, with treating diseases, and we want to be very specific about this. I mean, everyone knows that cannabis has been around for a long time. In fact, it's been around for 3,000 years for the treatment of various ailments. We know that people have taken it for pain. We know that it's effective in treating pain from cancer, in preventing the wasting away that cancer patients go through when their disease gets in late stages and things like that. What we want to do is look at cannabis as a source of a drug or drugs. Now, cannabis contains, depending on who you listen to, between 70 and 80 compounds that are called cannabinoids for obvious reasons. And one of the most prominent everybody knows, and that's THC, tetrahydrocannabinol. There's another one very close to it that's very prominent in the scientific literature, and it's called cannabidiol. And the difference between the two is simply that cannabidiol does not have the psychotropic effects that THC has, but it still has a lot of other good effects. And there's been a lot of work in the preclinical area of cancer treatment with laboratory studies and animal model systems that have proven that cannabidiol, for instance, will slow or prevent the growth of various types of tumors. One type is brain tumors, specifically one called glioblastoma multiforme, also pancreatic cancer tumor cells. So the preclinical work indicates that this particular compound from cannabis is an obvious thing for us, and I view us now as a drug company, is to run with this and see what we can find out. Now, specifically what we want to do is to look at brain tumors, specifically glioblastomas. Why? Because brain tumors are notoriously hard to treat, just like pancreatic tumors, but for different reasons. In the case of pancreatic tumors, they're hard to treat because you don't know they're there until they're advanced. With brain tumors, they're hard to treat because there's a nebulous thing called the blood-brain barrier, and I always looked at this as wrapping the brain in saran wrap. And what it does, it prevents a lot of commonly used and very, very good anti-cancer agents from getting into the brain through the bloodstream. So because they can't get into the brain, you can't use them. They're not effective. We know that cannabinoids like THC get into the brain because they wouldn't have psychotropic effects if they didn't. So by using cannabidiol, which is a sister compound to THC, we believe that this is a good initial way to approach the therapy of these glioblastomas and pancreatic cancer. And the pancreatic cancer stuff, of course, dovetails well with what we've done with our cell encapsulation, because we know a lot about pancreatic cancer and how to treat it. So that's the initial thrust, I believe, of the Medical Marijuana Sciences subsidiary.
With the pancreatic cancer and now the new Medical Marijuana subsidiary taking on brain cancers, you guys certainly aren't taking any easy roads, are you?
There's other companies out there that are looking at cancer use in the same way that we want to, but we really want to go after the hard targets. And there's no harder targets than brain tumors and pancreatic cancer, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we've got so many opportunities within Nuvalex, not just the new subsidiary, but with the cell encapsulation and cancer. We're not limited to pancreatic cancer. We've already done animal studies in other forms of cancer, such as breast cancer models, and seen exactly similar results. In other words, we get a profound increase in the effectiveness of the drug by using cell encapsulation, in which the cells inside the capsules activate that particular drug. And it's not ifosfamide we used. It's another drug, a sister drug to ifosfamide. But it happens to be that the same type of cells will activate both drugs. So maybe we could use both drugs at once in our cancer studies. There's all kinds of possibilities. We don't have the time to talk about them.
We've touched on the cancers, and we've touched on stem cells a bit as well. Well, we haven't really touched on diabetes, and I know you guys have some stuff going on with that as well. Can you catch us up?
Let me tell you quickly about what we've done in diabetes already. We've done animal studies in which we took pancreatic islet cells. In other words, remember, those are the cells that produce insulin. We took pancreatic islet cells from pigs, encapsulated them, and put them into diabetic rats. Now, what should have happened if they weren't encapsulated? They should have been destroyed immediately. They weren't. They sat there, and on demand, they started to produce insulin. Within a couple of days, the glucose levels in the blood of the rats became normal and stayed that way for the duration of the experiment, which was 6 months. When the cells were removed from the rats, the capsules containing the cells were removed from the rats, and the cells inside the capsules were examined, they were fully alive and still capable of producing insulin on demand. Now, that's a remarkable achievement, because with normal pancreatic islet cell transplantations that other companies are looking at, they're going to require the use of immunosuppressive drugs along with their treatment. Why? Because some of the other encapsulation methodologies don't protect the cells within the capsules as well as ours does, we don't believe. And these drugs, immunosuppressive drugs, are expensive, and they would have to be for the rest of the patient's lives. Now, if we have a technology that will keep cells alive for extended periods of time in the body, and I'm not talking about rats, I can go back to more than 2 years in our pancreatic cancer studies, and we don't know how long with a single implantation, and we don't require immunosuppressive drugs, what have we done? We've created an artificial pancreas, in effect.
Jerry, talking with you outside this interview and during this interview, I can tell that you're really having a good time with the science, aren't you?
I've been excited about a lot of stuff in my life, and Taxol was one of them, but there's been things before and since. But I have never, ever, in my wildest imagination, could I ever have imagined something with the fantastic potential that this platform cell encapsulation technology holds. There's just nothing. I mean, it is amazing stuff.
Well, Dr. Crabtree, that puts a button on it, so to speak, for the time being. We'd love to speak to you again as the Phase 3 trials get closer and you guys get more involved with that. But for now, we certainly have appreciated your time, and the pleasure has been all mine. We thank you for taking the hot seat, if you will, and being a part of another Stockhouse Group CEO interview.
I certainly appreciate, on behalf of Nuvalex, the opportunity to talk about what we're doing and where we're going.
And that was Dr. Jerry Crabtree. He, again, is the Chief Operating Officer at Nuvalex Incorporated.
This has been another Stock Market Media Group CEO interview. Keep listening as executives continue to tell their story and investors stay informed on the companies they own right here on StockMarketMediaGroup.com.